Good morning, Delaware. It is a overcast, but not terrible morning here in Delaware. I had an opportunity to actually get in my walk for the Preservation Parks Winter Challenge this morning before the show, so I'm feeling raring to go now. How are you doing, Nicole?
You're so good. I've done about 3 miles total. I don't know, but that's okay. I've got until March 31st.
This walk today put me over 11 kilometers.
That's pretty good.
So I'm making progress.
Is your app actually tracking kilometers, or are
no,
you
I just convert them on,
yeah.
I convert them online after the walk. If I really looked at how to do the app, I could probably convert it from miles to kilometers.
But yeah,
it's not.
Who uses
difficult.
Kilometers?
I grew up right next to Canada, so I'm used to clicks.
There you go.
Anyway, so good morning, Gage. How are you doing?
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Well, I am delighted to say that our guest today is Rachel Robison, who is a book blogger at booklistqueen.com. Good morning, Rachel. How are you doing?
Say that one more time.
We've got you back on. Muted. Sorry, we got to unmute you. Sorry.
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We are really excited to be talking about your reading challenge. I love the list, and we can't wait to talk to you about some of the categories that we're doing here. So what we'd like to do, though, is start by talking about what we're starting reading here in the new year. So,
yeah.
Nicole, what are you actually brought a physical book with you.
I have a real live book with me. This book is called Proust and the Squid, and it is by Marianne Wolfe, and it is about the science and the story of the reading brain. It is not a new book by any means. This book was published in 2007, and Marianne Wolfe, she's a scientist. She has worked with the reading and literate community. She also has a personal interest because she has a child who suffers from dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of coupled all of those things, all of those interests together, and so she wrote Proust and the Squid. And so the story, it's nonfiction, and what it's about is how the how written language was born.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with, of course, you know, the scratchings on the wall, pictures, how pictures translated to mean lots of different things, and then how that evolved into what we know as the alphabet today. Really some fascinating things that we talked about in my book group that mm-hmm. I'm a part of. This was our book club selection for the kickoff of the new year. You know, I was talking about, like, it's divided into three parts. You've got the history of writing and the written word. We always think of, you know, the Egyptians, of course, with the hieroglyphs.
Sure.
But there were other entities that were doing things before that. And really, you can think of the Chinese and the Japanese and their style of characters
right.
as that kind of style of symbols having meaning. Then she gets a little bit into the weeds. It's very academic at some points, but you can follow the story. I thought it was fascinating. You know, you might have had a symbol, and that symbol might have meant literally bird.
Mm-hmm.
But then as they started to develop, they were like, man, we don't want to have 10,000 characters that we're going to have to memorize. So then eventually they started to say, okay, well, bird sounds like a burr sound. And so if we combine the bird symbol with another symbol that has another, like, owl sound, you know, then we have created a word with these two symbols using what they sound like rather than what they literally mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really kind of where that developed. And then it went into, the actual develop of kind of the Greek alphabet, and that they decided this sound s will be symbolized by an S, and this sound t will be symbolized by a T, and then how that kind of changed everything. And what I didn't realize is how new writing is to mankind.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about Socrates, and Socrates was really against the written word because it had been an oral tradition up mm-hmm. until that point.
Indeed.
And many of his fears are almost echoed by people today, where the written word is going to destroy the oral tradition. Much like today, the digital word is going to destroy the written word, you know, and all of these fears. But of course, we talked about the irony in our book club that had Plato, his mentee, not ignored his advice, Socrates philosophies would not have been passed down.
Right, exactly.
It would not have been carried on in tradition. And then Aristotle, and then so on and so forth. So we thought that was really fascinating. And then the second part of the book goes into, basically, it is a mantra for everything every librarian knows, which is the reading and the developing brain. It's really about reading in childhood. And it goes into the science of, there are synapses that are happening in your brain. And so when you start reading to a child at a young age, you are priming those synapses mm-hmm. to get ready to read. And so the whole ready to read phrase isn't just a fun catchphrase. It's literally preparing a child's brain for reading. There was a fun study that correlated just how many number of books in a household, not even if the books are read, but just the number of books in a household to a child's set up for literacy later in life. And if there, it was like zero, some, and many. Mm-hmm. And of course, a household with zero books, the child is not going to be very well set up. But it was regardless of if those books were being read to the child, just the presence of books. So I thought that was fascinating too. So it's a fun book. It is academic. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 5, I'd give it a solid, 2.5, bordering on a 3, just because it's a little bit of a drag when you think nonfiction and you're like, ooh, nonfiction. This kind of fits that category. It's not like my Robert Kersen nonfiction where it's like action and drama and, storytelling. But it is fascinating. So Proust and the Squid, Marianne Wolf, and that's my first one of the new year.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Rachel, I doubt that you are not reading a book based on what I've read about you. What are you reading right now?
Can I talk about the book I just finished?
Absolutely. That's what I'm going to do.
I just finished The Mystery of Mrs. Christie by Marie Benedict.
Oh, yes. I saw a review of that. Yeah.
It just hit the New York bestsellers list. It's about Agatha Christie's life. It's a novel.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently in 1926, the mystery novelist Agatha Christie, so she's the author of Murder on the Orient Express, is one of her famous works.
Right.
She, in 1926, she disappeared for 11 days. Her car was found abandoned without her coat in December. And then she shows up 11 days later, claiming amnesia, and at a hotel, and she just never says another word about her disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
What? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating story.
Sounds like a setup.
That's what the book is claiming, that she set up her husband to look like he murdered her.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is just, it goes back and forth between her story and his story. So her story is like her life and her marriage. And it's really fascinating. And it's, just a historical, it's a novelization of her life. And it's mm-hmm. really interesting. And then his chapters are about how he's dealing with the police and feeling super guilty and trying to not look guilty. And so his chapters kind of drag.
Uh-huh.
And so the book overall was interesting, but his chapters kind of drag it down because there's not much she can say.
Right.
Oh, yeah, sure.
She doesn't make up what Agatha Christie did during those 11 days. She just kind of follows the husband as he deals with the police.
There's been a lot of speculation about this, and that novel sounds like it would really be fun to read about that because, she absolutely clammed up about it. No, never said anything about what had happened. So it's kind of fascinating that such a well-known mystery writer should have such a huge mystery right in the middle of her own life.
A personal mystery, exactly.
Yes, exactly. So great. Well, I just finished reading Annie Lyon's book, The Brilliant Life of Eudora Honeysett, which was published in the UK as Eudora Honeysett is Quite Well, Thank You.
Oh.
And I realized as I was doing some research on the book that it made sense for them to have different titles in the US because that idea that she's quite well is a very British way of saying, ignore me. Don't talk to me. I don't want to hear. This is just a way of cutting off the conversation.
Oh.
And American readers probably wouldn't pick up on that.
I would not have, no.
But this is ostensibly a story about death, but it's really about how to live a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, Eudora Honeysett is 85 years old. She is planning to go to Switzerland to a clinic that facilitates voluntary suicide. And the book starts with that decision and builds from there. She's living alone. Her mother has passed away. She's never been married. She's never had kids. She lives in a flat in Southeast London. She doesn't know her neighbors. She doesn't go out. She's very bitter. She's in a lot of pain from arthritis, and she is defiantly lonely. In other words, if people try to approach her, she basically keeps them at arm's length. But then a new family moves in next door, and they have a 10-year-old daughter named Rose. And they are introduced in they meet funny. So there's that. And then there's also another gentleman named Stanley who appears in her life, who helps her when she has she falls. She trips over something and falls, and he helps her. So her decision is complicated by meeting these two new people. Rose is like this 10-year-old force of nature. She's amazingly empathetic. She's full of love and energy. She drags Eudora kicking and screaming out of her apartment. Stanley is a widower. He's still grieving the loss of his beloved wife, Ada. But he's befriended by Rose. Eudora's been befriended by Rose, and they become like the Three Musketeers almost. She encourages him to be friendly and her to be friendly as well. So this is not high literature, but this is a fun read. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted to say that Annie Lyons is going to be our guest on Thursday, January 28th, our tea time with the author. The Friends of the Library sponsoring this. Mm-hmm. Did I say something wrong?
You said Thursday.
It is Thursday, isn't it? Thursday, January 28th.
Oh, when she's joining us.
When she's joining us, yes.
I thought she meant when she was coming on the radio with us.
No, she's coming on the radio with us. That'll not next week, but the week after, right? The 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, no, wait a minute. That is next week.
Wait a second. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out, yes. But the one you have to know about is the one that the Friends of the Library are sponsoring, because that one, there are $5 tickets for Friends, $10 tickets for non-members. This is a fundraiser for the Friends. And we are working with the bakery in Powell to provide tea time treats. So you stop there, you buy your treats to have at tea time, and at 4 o'clock, we will stop for tea and a discussion with Annie Lyons. We'll talk about this book and the other books that she's working on. She is she lives in the UK, which is why we're doing it at 4 o'clock and not later in the evening.
Yeah, that's a late night
time
for
difference.
Her.
And so I think you're really going to enjoy it. Her books are all about, she says, I want to carry readers along in a story which makes them laugh and shed the odd tear, but which ultimately leaves them feeling uplifted and hopeful. And I think after last year, we can use all the books like that we can find.
Right.
So again, this is Annie Lyons, The Brilliant Life of Eudora Honeysett. It was published in September. And as I said, on Thursday, January 28th, you'll have a chance to hear a reading from her and ask her questions as a fundraiser for the Friends of the Library. So thank you very much, friends. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and we will talk to Rachel Robison about the booklistqueen.com blog and her 2021 Reading Challenge. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Our guest today is Rachel Robison, who is the book list queen at booklistqueen.com. And you're a book blogger. How did you get started with this?
I started a lifestyle blog with my sister, and I quickly realized my life was kind of boring. But people really liked my book list, which was kind of just a random add-on I added because I like to read.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided I'd just go into book blogging.
So that's great. I've been enjoying what you have written there. But then when I saw the Book List Queen Reading Challenge for 2021, that's when I said to Nicole, we need to get her as a guest on the show.
Especially to start off the new year in
exactly,
January.
Right. So you have a 52 challenge reading list here. So how did you come up with this? And we'll talk a little bit about some of the categories that you suggest here.
I decided that I did one once, ages ago, and since I had a book blog, I thought, you know, maybe other people would like to have a fun challenge to do. Mm-hmm. I like the 52 books. It makes it so that there's something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more aspirational.
Oh, yeah.
So if you don't finish all 52 books, it doesn't matter. You can just pick and choose certain categories, and you still feel like you've read more, and you've kind of diversified your reading.
I like that. I love the fact that it doesn't feel as coercive as some of the book lists.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you read 52, great. If you can have one book that fits into more than one category, use it across the categories.
Right.
It just gives you sort of a context for doing your reading.
Right, exactly. I mean, and sometimes even I would probably go backwards and I would start with the book that I wanted to read anyway. Like just now, I was like, what would my book Proust and the Squid fit in on this, you know? And so I was trying to look through. I was like, well, I did get it from the library. I started it as an audiobook, which are two categories on your list. And it talks about, oh, a book that makes me think. It made me think for sure.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm not going to read 52 books this year. So I'll probably check off all three of those categories.
There we go. So I highlighted a few of the categories on the list because I like some of these categories a lot. And I just wondered, if you were filling out this list, what would be some of the books you might put in there? So, for example, you've got a category set in the 1920s. So the first book that pops to my mind is The Great Gatsby, because that's the one I think most people would think of, but set in the 20s. But what other books do you have in mind that might fit in that category?
So The Great Gatsby has an unofficial sequel that just came out called Nick.
Yes.
I don't know if it's any good, but I know it's out there.
Yes.
That's interesting.
I really like a book called The Seven Half-Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Clue mixed with the movie Groundhog Day. So it's a little mystery that repeats.
Oh.
It's very cute and very clever, but it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good.
That one has one of those gorgeous covers that you love to see on a book. I think it looks very in the 1920s kind of theme.
I like those kinds of things. Yeah, that Art Deco feeling always is good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how about a book that makes you think? I like to think that most of the books I read, I wish I could write a book. Most of the books I read make me think. But what kinds of things would you have in mind with this, Rachel?
I think you can take it any direction you want, which is kind of what's fun about the reading challenge.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of nonfiction books would fall in this category, but fiction works really well too.
Mm-hmm.
A book that I really like is called Grit by Angela Duckworth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little older one, but it talks about how people, we think of success as being like smart,
mm-hmm.
whereas success is generally determined by how much grit you have, how much you're willing to recover after a failure, and how, you know, stick-to-itiveness, I guess.
Right.
And I really liked that book. It really changed my thinking about certain things, especially with my husband. He's more of he's not super ambitious. He always wanted to be like the master of his career. And it was like, oh, okay. Like I accepting like the way he does things. And I really liked it.
Great. I the book that I've already read this year that made me think was Homeland Elegies.
Right.
You know, that one, I'm still thinking about that. I finished reading it a week and a half ago, and it is still processing through my head. I may have to go back and reread some of it.
Yeah, because, I think if you've got a book that you continually think about, I think that's definitely one that fits into that category. Or one that, like you said, Rachel, changes your mind, you know?
Yes, yeah. How about a childhood favorite? There are some kids' books that I read. I'm kind of scared to go back and look at them because they influenced me a lot when I was, you know, seven, but I wonder if they were really any good or not.
Mm-hmm.
What childhood favorites do you have, Rachel?
I really like Anne of Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Boxcar Children, I guess, was a favorite when I was a child. I don't know if I'd pick that one back up. My kids read it, though, so that's kind of fun. And Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
I usually, with that category, I generally read like a children's classic that I haven't read in ages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Boxcar Children because let's go ahead and just jump into that real briefly
here.
We have a new book club that's specifically meant for second, third, and fourth graders. Specifically, we started this because we had a little girl who wrote to us and said, my brother has a book club. My mother has a book club.
Mm-hmm.
I want a book club.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have anything for kids that age. So we decided to do it. We went to her and we asked her, what book would you like to start it with? And she answered,
The Boxcar Children. So they are starting the book club. It actually meets this coming Tuesday, January 12th at 6:30. It's a virtual meeting and it's for second, third, and fourth graders. Or if you have someone, you know, advanced who's reading The Boxcar Children or someone who's not in those grades who's read The Boxcar Children, and you can certainly jump in. But yeah, so that's funny that you mentioned that. That was definitely one that I read as a child, too. I did try and I found it in audio format, and I was going on a road trip, and I thought it would be good for me to listen to with my kids in the car. And the audio reader that I found for the one particular book was not bueno. It was
What book was that?
Well, it was The Boxcar Children.
Oh, okay.
But there, when I looked it up, there were multiple readers who had have, you know, done their interpretation of book one, and the one that I chose poorly, so I could not continue with it.
I like this one, this category here, classic read in high school. There are so many books I read or was supposed to read in high school that I didn't have the perspective to understand then. So it'd be really good to go back and reread something that, like, people are always after me because I hate Jane Austen.
Oh.
And to go back and actually read that as an adult instead of trying to read it when you're in high school. So what classic have you, would you go back and read from high school, do you think, Rachel?
I should probably reread some Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. I haven't read much of it since high school, and I'm much more mature now, and so a lot easier to read, I guess, and to understand.
I really think Shakespeare works much better to hear it and see it than
stage.
It does to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many good audio recordings and video recordings of all the Shakespeare plays. The poetry, though, would be great to read. It's still the sonnets are still wonderful to read.
Or an annotated Shakespeare, if you could get an annotated along with, like, you know, how it would have been performed with stage directions, how it would have been performed with, you know, costume scenery, things like that. I'd enjoy that.
I saw on your blog your favorite books. I'm wondering if the book with the number in the title would be appropriate for that.
Yes, that's what I read last year, actually. I read 1984, which is my favorite book. Not a lot of people, it's not going to be their book, but I really love it. I think he's a brilliant author and how well he can twist your mind around.
Yes, yeah, it's as much a book about language as it is about politics. And I reread that about 2 years ago, and I agree with you. It's one of the classics of 20th century English literature. I don't think you can get around that. So I think I talked about it on the show here.
In 1984?
About 1984,
You certainly did.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you. we've been doing this show for 5 years, so sometimes I forget what books I've talked about and what I haven't.
It's more often than not with me, too.
I should mention that one of the reasons I really wanted Rachel on the show is she's an Ohio native, even though she doesn't live in Utah, or she lives in Utah now. She doesn't live in Ohio anymore. Originally from Cedarville?
Yes, I'm born and raised in Cedarville. Well, there's no hospital, so I wasn't born in Cedarville, but I grew up in Cedarville, which is, if you follow 42 down south through the cornfields, you'll eventually hit it and then miss it.
Yeah, the cornfields and the subdivisions now, yeah. So it's quite a beautiful little town. So and you met your husband. He was wearing an Ohio State shirt in Utah. Is he also an Ohioan,
yeah,
or did he just like OSU?
No, he's from Ohio as well. He's from Kent, Ohio.
Okay.
But we met out in Utah.
That's funny. You can't go anywhere without seeing Ohio State shirts.
It was kind of.
Well, Rachel, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Again, her book blog is booklistqueen.com, and the reading challenge, the Book List Queen Reading Challenge 2021 is available there, and we'll probably also link to it on the library's website.
I think we've shared it twice this week already.
There we go.
It's all over the Facebook.
So, thank you very much, Rachel. We really appreciate you being here, especially for getting up so early in Utah. And also, please tell your kids thank you for watching TV during this rather than coming in. But they would have been welcome too. So thanks very much. Do we have time for like anything else that's going on in the library this week, Nicole?
We sure do. I would say pop on to DelawareLibrary.org, click on the events tab. We've got our Saturday Night Library Trivia is this Saturday, and it is the Jeopardy theme.
Tribute to the late Alex Trebek, whose last show will air today, Friday. If you're listening on the replay or on the podcast, this is on Friday, January 7th, the last show that, or 8th rather, his last show.
Yep. So we've got Saturday Night Library Trivia tomorrow night, Saturday at 8 p.m. You can also catch it all the back trivia games are on the YouTube channel. We've got, you might want to register for the Maker Annex. It might not be open with lab hours right now, but you can still figure out. Kellen's going to tell us about what you can do virtually with the Maker Annex. And then we've got some great collaborations coming up with Centero. We've got a Parents Stay Positive, a parenting strategy workshop that they're starting, a 5-week workshop. And then also separate from that, they have a parenting workshop series that's beginning. You can sign up for those individually, but the one coming up on the 14th is Developing Good Bedtime Routine. These are free and they will change your life.
I should do that for myself.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, again, thanks to the Friends of the Library for sponsoring the show. Thank you, Gabe. stage for manning the board for us.
My pleasure.
Rachel Robison, thank you so much for being our guest today, and good luck with the reading challenge for this year. And Nicole, as always, a pleasure. And we will see you in the parking lots.